You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
G'day, Cameron here. Hey, Mick.
Yeah. Come over here and say g'day to the G'day World audience.
G'day, Cam.
Yeah, you remember this voice? Here's a blast from the past.
G'day, Cam. G'day, Mick. G'day, boys. How we doing?
Shit, my phone. Yeah.
Just get your phone.
Just tell everyone, because they keep asking me, where's Mick? Tell them where Mick's been.
I've been busy. Busy with Tech Ed. Busy doing servers. Busy doing iTunes tags. God help me and iTunes tags.
Rumour that you've just been on the beach.
What, hanging out with you?
Yeah.
Hanging out with
it's
Doc...
It's only a rumour because I haven't been there.
Hanging out with Doc Neil on the beach.
Yeah.
No. We've been busy. All the iTunes tagging has been a pain in the proverbial. It has been...
Why? What's so hard about it? And what could Apple do to make it easier?
What could Apple do to make it easier? Apple could actually agree to just deal with everyone else's XML tagging structure and all of their schemas and everything else. They've just gone and changed everything. It's painful.
Painful.
Had to create their own XML schema that was labelled iTunes everywhere. It just stuffs everything else up. So they reuse tags that exist already. So that's been my life.
Hey, Mick, that was the producer from 60 Minutes. They want to do Tuesday next week.
Woo-ha!
Awesome.
Dr. Neil, that's a cool watch.
Thank you.
What kind of watch is it?
It is a USB memory watch.
Oh, no.
It is the ultimate in Uber Geek watch. It's a watch with 256 meg RAM on it.
And you actually have anything in the memory?
I do, actually. All of my presentations are backed up there. Just in case. You never can be too careful, you know.
And just a little bit of porn?
No porn on this one. No, that's my other watch.
It's not really enough memory for much good porn, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. I actually, most of the porn has to go onto much bigger sticks.
Oh, we'll leave that one alone. Now, Dr. Neil, you're doing this virtual Earth thing. I don't know what a virtual Earth is. So can you tell me what a virtual Earth is?
So virtual Earth is a product from MSN, from Microsoft, and it's really a mapping tool for searching what's in your locale, so what's in your area. It's got some cool features for locating where you are based on Wi-Fi hotspot locations. So if you're on a laptop or a tablet machine and you can see Wi-Fi hotspots, then they've got a whole database of Wi-Fi hotspots around the USA currently, and they're increasing the size of that constantly. And so they can locate you pretty accurately. If you can see three hotspots, they can triangulate you based on your hotspots.
And what's the practical purpose of something like that?
Well, think about, you know, location in a city, or location as you're walking around town, or, you know, you're sitting in a cafe and you say, hey, you know what? I really ought to get something for my girlfriend because I'm in this town and I haven't been home for 6 months. Of course, most people don't live that lifestyle, but I know you do, Cam. So, you know, and you think, you know, what should I get? Maybe a handbag or a pair of shoes, but I don't know where the shops are around here. So you go to Virtual Earth and you can have a look and say, well, based on where I am now, what's around me? And, you know, where's my nearest ATM so I can go overdrawn and buy some cool things?
So what's the vision for Virtual Earth? How do they see people really using it? I mean, surely it's not a solution that's been designed for people to be able to do better shopping. Does the world really need people to do more shopping?
It's actually more specific than that. It's all about shoe shopping.
Manolo Blancas? Manolo Blancs, whatever they're called?
Absolutely. Let's not worry about the general cases. Let's get really detailed here. No, the general cases are really about finding out what's around you and seeing it in a geographical format. So, you know, one of the things that... You know, look at what's happened here at TechEd. People are annoyed, a little bit angry, shall we say. Fucking pissed off because there aren't maps of how to get to where they need to get to.
Maps of the venue?
Maps of the venue, maps of how they get from the hotels to the venue... It's not clear. And that's how humans get around, is by mapping. Mapping is a fantastic way to get from A to B, right? You want to see, I want to go up this road, turn left, turn right, and there's where I want to be. So Virtual Earth provides that it's really taking the concept of some of the hardcore GIS systems and commoditizing it. And saying, you know, here now we have...
But isn't that what I've got in my sat-nav system in my Beamer?
Yeah, but do you have it on your laptop right now?
No.
So that's the idea, is taking it, you know, out to the general public through different medium, and mainly through
the web. Actually, I do. I have things like whereis.com.au.
You do have some of that stuff. What you don't have is then connecting that through to searches, connecting that through to aerial imagery, being able to zoom in on an aerial image and say, hey, what does that building actually look like? So as I'm approaching that building, I can get an idea of what the street corner will look like. That gives you an idea of, you know, say you're driving from A to B, you want to see where the main intersections are. So as you approach, you say, oh, I remember that building. That's what that building looked like as you approach it.
Don't we more want systems to talk to us while we're getting there? You are 50 meters. You are 25 meters.
We have some of those systems right now.
You are not driving on a mapped road.
Yeah, you've been doing plenty of that, have you?
I get that all the time. Yeah. Please, you are not on a digitized road. Please return to a digitized road.
Yeah. You are lost. We can't help you. So, I mean, that's part of it, but... you know,
which part of turn left didn't you understand?
Other left. Yeah, well, the systems aren't quite that clever yet, are they? But
you're not really going to, you know, do that on a laptop. People don't
no,
walk.
You're not going to do that on a laptop.
Normal people don't walk around with laptops, right? Is this going to be on a phone, on a 3G phone?
You look at what we're doing on Via Virtual Earth. So Via Virtual Earth is really about how developers can build stuff on top of that. So if you look at MSN, MSN has maps and directions right now. You know, which is similar to what you were saying, where is. So Virtual Earth is really the next step of maps and directions. It's taking maps and directions to the next level. It's got more detail, it's got more searching, it's got aerial imagery, it's got some funky stuff, and it's got some really useful stuff. So what we're doing on Via Virtual Earth is showing developers how they can then build extra layers on top of that. So say you are a fanatical cyclist, and you live in Melbourne, just as an example. And so you go out cycling every weekend, you got your face.
Actually, that shirt you're wearing kind of looks like the shirt that a cyclist would wear.
Yeah, and this shirt I'm wearing is actually given to me by the MediaCast team.
We've all just been given these fluoro yellow official MediaCaster shirts to wear at TechEd, and they're an absolute nightmare. But anyway, keep going. Yeah, you're a cyclist.
So just imagine hypothetical situation, and you've got your favorite track. So you plot them out on Virtual Earth. This is an extra layer that someone would build on top of Virtual Earth. They plot out their cycle tracks. And then you go online and you share those. And then you find that there's other cyclists that have got other cool tracks, and you can share their tracks. And you can start saying, oh, I didn't realize there was that cool track like 15 miles up the road. I can put my bike in the back of the car and drive up there and do a cycle track that guy does. He really rates it.
You're not giving me any scenarios here that are really talking about changing the world. What are the change of the world scenarios, Dr. Neil?
I think that is changing the world because it's starting to...
Giving better bike tracks for people?
Well, it's just an example of community building.
What's the big thing, though? Isn't it really going to be used for, like, sending, soldiers into Baghdad and being able to figure out better ways to kill terrorists or something?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I did suggest that we had a find your nearest terrorist layer and someone would build that. But
an API, the terrorist API?
Yeah, well, the next suggestion came out that we could actually still call it find your nearest terrorist and just plot out all the locations of politicians. But that wasn't taken seriously, thankfully. I see that there's lots of different applications. The community application is a great one. And, you know, cycling is just an example. But, you know, whatever you're into that involves some kind of geographical, this is how you get to, this is where we're going to, this is where we're meeting, it's a way of sharing that information.
Look, there's no doubt that geolocation services have to be a big thing. And one of the things that you find here all the time, you and I just did it 5 minutes ago. I ring your mobile and say, where are you? Where are you? Where are we going to meet? Which part of the building are you in? When we have all this great technology on us, it should say, I should be able to log on and say, okay, oh, here's where Neil is, and some sort of...
Yeah, you know. That starts to get interesting, because do I want Cam to know where I am? No, probably not. You know, in fact, do I want many people to know where I am? No, definitely not.
So wearing that shirt, you're not going to be hiding anyway, man.
No, and there's actually a website, a layer that's built on top of Virtual Earth, an example called Where Was Dr. Neil, which actually maps out where I've been, but doesn't show you where I'm going to be right now. So I don't want to give that away. Cam's now taking a picture of me with his terribly poor quality phone camera. Yeah, it's terrible. What is that, 1 megapixel if you're lucky?
It's, I don't know, Windows-powered mobile pocket PC, yeah. XDA.
Actually, what I was going to say is, you were saying, you know, don't we want this on our phones? Yes, we do, and if you look on the Via Virtual Earth Gallery, someone's already built a version of Pocket Earth that runs on your phone. And someone's built one using Windows Mobile. Someone's also built one using J2ME.
Yeah, I've had Pocket Streets on my PDA for years, and you know, integrating something like Pocket Streets with a GPS system and being able to drill down into the maps into visual imagery or something, I can kind of see that as being useful when I go to Manhattan and I'm walking around Manhattan and getting lost and stuff like that, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, that's definitely, you know, mobilizing the maps is definitely one of the things that I'm interested in. I mean, my main focus is providing a way that people can build interesting layers on top. You know, Julie Lerman's done a great thing with ink enabling the maps, so you can actually start on a tablet PC drawing on a map and say, hey, this is my home, this is where you guys live, in order to get here you've got to drive down these roads, this is where we're meeting, this is the pub, and just scribbling on a map and then send it to someone. That's a cool thing to be able to do.
It is, but having GPS NavSat systems built into all of our devices, I shouldn't have to think about where I'm going, right? It's one thing I don't need to worry about. I love my NavSat system in my car so much, man, because it just removes one more layer of thinking and processing that I need to be worrying about. And yeah, surely we want that inbuilt into every damn device
plan
we have.
Your itinerary. So say you are going...
Plan?
Yeah, plan. You know that funny
word? Do I look like a chick?
It's a four-letter word. Anyway... When you do want to plan your itinerary...
I have a wife. She plans my itinerary.
Right. So how does she plan your itinerary? Yeah, so it gives you an opportunity to do that. You know, if you're a family and you're going on holiday to a town and you want to see where the cool things are, you can actually, you know, plan out the things you want to do, the shopping you want to do, the sights you want to see, the restaurants you want to eat at. You can link into those on a map. You can say, now give me a review of these restaurants. We're going to be going to this zoo. What good restaurants are there around here that are rated 4 or 5 star? What kind of food? We've got one of our kids is allergic to nuts. Is there a place we can go that where there's nut-free food? Whatever, you know, all those kind of things. And then you can actually say, well, based on what we can see on the map, these are the places that are close to us. We'd have to go a bit further out to get to these places. That looks good. We'll go to that one. You build up your itinerary. You can then keep that itinerary in a scratch pad and go back to it. So next time you log on to Virtual Earth, there's the itinerary you had. It will be there for you. It's your information. You can also blog it. So it connects straight through to blog, so you can blog your itinerary. So if you want to share it with a group of people, you can also email it. So you can email your itinerary, and all of those links in the itinerary will click through to a map and show them where that place is.
You know, you've just reminded me of something else that I've been talking to with some friends, you know, for about, I don't know, a year or so. What I want, and it kind of ties into this in some ways, is a way to link some kind of a mapping service like that into my instant messenger. So it's not so much when I log on to a hotspot that I want to know where I am, it's I want to let everyone else. So for example, if I go to a cafe in Melbourne and I'm logging in there in the morning, for everyone, all of my friends who live, you know, within 5 kilometres of where I am to see that I'm logged on and I'm here, or when I travel international, for people to know that, oh, Cameron's in Manhattan, we should probably hook up with him or something like that.
Oh, I don't want to go anywhere near that cafe.
Yeah, avoid the hell.
Cameron's in that cafe, so I'll go to the one across the street, yeah.
That's the more general.
Microsoft Legal are telling Microsoft employees to, you know, Cameron's in town, avoid him like the plague, because he's going to ask you a hard question.
Yeah, he's going to put a mic in front of you and... then you'll be screwed.
Ask you what your blogging policy is, and we don't really have a good answer for it, so avoid him like the plague.
So, yeah, I mean, those kind of things are cool too, and being able to know, you know, being able to show where your friends are. And there's a whole other group in Microsoft looking after that. There's the location server group, what used to be the MapPoint location server. I have no idea what they're called now, but they're part of the mobility team. And those guys, I actually had dinner with one of those guys recently when I was in Redmond chatting about some of that technology. That's definitely on their agenda to, you know, enable you to share that information with certain people and give you the ability to have privacy and switch it on and switch it off. And you can do that right now with MLS, with the MapPoint location server, but it's really an enterprise solution. So how do you then take that to, you know, the general public and open it up to a bigger audience? I guess that's what they're dealing with now, and that's what they're looking into. And you're absolutely right, hooking that into something like IM, into your MSN IM, that would be an awesome solution. It'd be great to see something like that actually get released. I don't know. I don't know whether Microsoft will release that in the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, ever. You know, a lot of this stuff is...
If they don't, Google will, so it's okay.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the latest IM purchase by Google brings some interesting ideas into play, shall we say.
they purchased one? Who did they purchase?
They've purchased a piece of IM software. I don't even know what the company details are, but
what is this, the stuff they've built Google Talk on top of, the Jabber stuff, or is this separate?
I think it's something separate. It's to do with knowing who's in your area and being able to open up IM messages only with those people. It's location-based.
Wow, that's cool.
It's a little bit... And you know, I think it's related to the Google announcement that they want to put free Wi-Fi across the entire United States.
Have they actually announced that? That was just a rumor the last time.
It's related to the rumor that, that Google...
They were buying dark fiber and people were saying maybe they're going to give free Wi-Fi, yeah. But I don't think that... I think actually it did get scotched by Om Malik or somebody.
Yeah. So, anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Back to the virtual earth stuff. I mean, I think for me, it's just about the layers that people are putting on, the interesting information that people are starting to put on maps, you know.
Who's capturing all the... You were talking about, you know, the best restaurants and the ones that, you know, have kid-friendly menus. And who captures that metadata? Is that something that people can submit themselves into a database, or is that something that has to be done by Microsoft?
Right now, Microsoft has its own set of layers that is being used. But there's nothing stopping someone building a layer on top that captures it as well.
See, what would be cool, in my humble opinion, would be something like Wikipedia,
right,
where people could submit their own information about their suburb. I was thinking about this about a year ago. I was travelling around Europe.
Yeah,
and
I remember having that conversation.
Yeah, and you'd be walking past a castle and going, who built that castle, and where can, you know, what's all the history? And there's somebody who lives in that part of Italy that knows everything about that castle, but it's not in my guidebook. I should be able to log on and use a GPS service to say, I'm standing right here, I'm looking at this building, what's the history behind this building?
Yeah.
And there's people, we've got to find ways of encouraging people to take this knowledge they have in their heads about their local area or the history, dumping it down into some sort of an open platform. Microsoft should be doing that, man. That would be cool. That would make Microsoft cool again.
Yeah, well, I think the first step for me is certainly linking geographical location to blogs. Because then when you go somewhere, when you find out something... Say I go to Conwy Castle in Wales, and I say, hey, I know who that, you know, this was built by Edward the First or whatever. And so I blog, I was at Conwy Castle, it was built by Edward the First, this is what I know about it. Then next time someone goes there, they can go, oh, shit, who's been around here? Who's blogged about this space? Do a search, peel up all the people that have been there, their little photos of it, their blog entries. And
well, you could already do that with a Technorati search or something.
Yeah, but then hooking that into the maps. So being able to then bring up a map of that clustered information, zoom into it, find specific information.
That's very cool. I like that idea. That's very cool.
We're starting to see people build, a few examples of that in the Via Virtual Earth Gallery, starting to build linking systems that link into the maps, and you can get data that's geographical, you know, that's geolocated data, basically, geocoded data. It's based on lat longs. People are hooking data in. I think one of the interesting things that's starting to emerge, and we're really on the curve for this, the leading edge for this, is all those RSS feeds, all those XML data streams that are out there, getting lat longs embedded into them. You know, imagine everywhere you go when you blog, you automatically get the lat long put in there.
And how would you do that?
Well, I mean, at the moment there's more than one format for RSS for XML lat long, but I mean you could do that through there's multiple ways of doing that. The most obvious one and kind of the simplest, least friction, is to utilize GPS, and a lot of devices are starting to get GPS, like a lot of the new gen phones are getting GPS built.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, how long do you think it's going to be before we do have GPS built into all of our electronic devices? What's the price point on them at the moment?
It's not just a price point issue. So the next gen of phones, a lot of them are getting GPS built in. In fact, a lot of phones that are already shipped have GPS built in but switched off, because the telcos don't want to switch them on until they can work out revenue models of how to get money out of you.
Fucking telcos, they're evil.
Yeah.
Death to all telcos.
Cameron said that.
Yes, he did.
So that's one thing. But the other thing is then being able to do lookups. So, well, I know what my address that I'm currently on this street. Well, what's the lat long of this street? I'm at number 76, the Broadway. Just put that in. Don't worry about what the lat long is. It'll automatically geocode that. Right? So
It's clunky though, right?
It's not as clean as a GPS solution, but actually a lot of the time you're in the same location. So if you knew what your work address was and you know you're blogging from work, or you know what your home address is and you know you're blogging from home, or you know that you're on your journey from work to home or home to work, or you know that you're in, you know, at the sailing club in the weekend and you're blogging there, or you know that you're at, you know, because of course you go to church every Sunday, so you know you're at church.
I went to church last Sunday.
Yeah, so you know you're at church and you're probably sitting at the back blogging.
Actually, no, the priest who run the church is about to start a show on TPN for us. Father Bob Maguire of the John Safran show, John Safran versus God show.
Superb.
That's too funny.
Little plug for the new Father Bob Maguire show on the podcast network.
Good work.
So, well, actually, I was just thinking when we're talking about it, when talking about GPS, you know, if I take a photo with my DSLR, Canon, whatever it is, it grabs all this metadata around the photo. It'd be very cool if it actually grabbed where you were standing, GPS location.
Only one step away.
How wicked would that be? And then, when you uploaded your photos to Flickr, if it auto-sorted via GPS and all that kind of stuff, that'd be wild, man.
There's another example of what.
Oh, and then you could like you go to Florence, and you'd be standing somewhere in Florence near the Duomo, and go, what are all the other things that people have taken photos of this area, and how do I get there, and automatically so guide me to that? How do I get from the Duomo to David and guide me there? And that'd be wicked, man.
Now, on top of Virtual Earth, there's an application in our gallery called Geotagger that links Flickr photos onto maps.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, you see, there you go. So, there's a cool application. So, you just go to Flickr.
Only took us 21 minutes to find a cool application, Dr. Neil. You need to get this pitch happening, man. This, you know, stop talking to geeks and talk
to think something that you thought was cool.
I am the people. I'm the voice of the people, Dr. Neil. You're not talking to the geeks. You're talking to the real people.
Okay. So, we found it anyway. So, that's the one that hits your sweet spot. So you just drag your photos onto a map to show where they are, where you took the photos. Geotagger's up there as well. There's probably about 20 applications in the gallery right now, and it's growing daily. You know, we haven't even been live a month yet, and just an awesome number of things. People are contributing. And I know that there's projects that people are building that we haven't seen yet, because they're sending me emails, how do I do this, how do I do that? And I know they're doing something fairly complicated because of the questions they're asking. So we're going to start to see more interesting applications built on top of Virtual Earth over the coming month and two. Actually, in order to push some of that, we're going to, and I probably shouldn't be saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway, we're going to be hosting a competition for
Scoop
developers. Yep, top scoop. First time you'll hear this, of course, God knows when it will actually get broadcast.
About a week. I've got to wait till Microsoft pays us for the rest of the stuff, then we can put out the controversial stuff.
So when it gets broadcast, it will probably already be announced, but we're going to launch a competition on the Via Virtual Earth website.
What is the URL for the website, by the way?
It is via, V-I-A, virtualearth.com.
Very clever.
Simple. Very easy.
Not .msn.com/Microsoft_.au or something?
No. So my website is actually totally independent from Microsoft. It's a Via Virtual Earth website. We're showing you things, how to hack Virtual Earth, essentially. How you can build stuff on top of Virtual Earth. And all the legalese and all that is on there as well. And we try to make it in plain English. So if you want to know how you commercialize your application on Virtual Earth, we have the answers there as well, in plain English, not in tiny letters hidden away at the bottom of a terms and conditions agreement, but actually in the FAQ. Just go and search for commercialization. It's all up there. So, you know, that's been my aim, is really to help developers build stuff on top of Virtual Earth, because I can see there's a lot of opportunities. I don't have time to do all the building, but I've got time to show people how to do the building.
What's in it for you?
Building a development community, supporting developers. That's what I'm all about. I'm all about increasing the value of people's software. So I think that putting maps in software is a great way to increase the value of it. You know, whether you're building something that's, you know, specifically for home users, or building something that's for enterprise, all those people need maps. All those people get lost the whole time. All those people need to know where their nearest XYZ, where their nearest gas station, where their nearest ATM, all those things. So it's a general purpose thing, as far as I can see. Maps is something that everybody uses every day. What's going to be interesting is, you know, what happens to the A to Z's, the UBDs, the street directories of the world. Because I think slowly people are getting rid of those. I mean, how many times does anyone, you've got, you know, sat nav in your car, but a lot of people still don't have sat nav, but more and more people are not even bothering with their street directories anymore. They just print out directions, get in the car and drive. So
I've done that when I've been in LA and whatever recently.
Right.
I go up, print it off. Actually, I don't. I was in a hotel in LA a few months ago, and I had to get somewhere. Had my rental car. I actually had the tablet PC sitting on the spare seat next to me with all the maps downloaded.
Well, I do the same, actually. I've got the Bluetooth GPS, and I just put that on the dashboard. I've got my tablet PC, links into all my streets and trips, and I drive around. Yeah, I drove all around Europe last year with the European version of Streets and Trips is auto route. Drove all around Europe, didn't get lost once. It was awesome. It was just an absolutely amazing experience just to sit, you know, when I was navigating and Chris was driving, or Chris was navigating, I was driving, the navigator just sat there with the tablet on their lap and said, oh, you're going to get a sharp turn to the right in about 150 yards. Whoa, there it is. You know, it's like, you can see where you are, you can see elevation, you can see speed.
It's not as good as sat-nav though, right?
It's not built into the car, but in some ways it's better because you can take it out, you can sit in your hotel room and plan your route, plan your itinerary, which you can't do when you've got the sat-nav built into the car.
No, but you want to have a combination of the two. You want to have both.
Really, that would be ideal, and I'd love to see that in the future as well. You know, you sit on your tablet PC, you work out your itinerary, you work out where you want to go, the castles you want to see, the museums you want to visit, the shops you want to stop at. You take your tablet PC, you dock it in your car, and it's all integrated into your car, into the voice system and everything. I mean,
just Bluetooth it to your car, mate.
Yeah, you don't even need to plug it in. Sure, you could Bluetooth it in too.
Yeah, that's. I mean, the one problem with, obviously, the NatSave systems in cars at the moment is they're running off a DVD in the boot, and they're totally offline, and, you know, it's kind of clunky.
Yeah, so to bring those online, to be downloading data, you know, uploading the new data that you're gathering, downloading data other people are gathering.
And, you know, I would pay a monthly service to have all this data kept up to date, and that'd be a huge revenue stream, you'd think, for someone like Microsoft.
You would have thought so. You would have thought that's a big business to, I mean, sure, a lot of people would pay a small subscription fee for that information, or one yearly subscription fee. You know, I'd subscribe to that for you. I think,
what if every time you pulled into a petrol station to fill up your car with petrol, your car communicated with some sort of mapping, you know, synchronization service at a BP service station that gave you the latest maps?
Yeah.
You know, why are they doing that? Come on!
Yeah, well, I actually thought of another application for the Via Virtual Earth, for the gallery, you know, to build on top of Virtual Earth, would be an application that people start as a community plotting out petrol prices in their area, so you can, you know, you can, you're about to, your car's running low, you go online, you say, well, where's the cheapest petrol around here? You go and find the straight away, and it could be very community driven, and that would actually, I think, be quite clever, because it would hopefully force the gas stations to think quite hard about putting petrol prices up, because it's like, well, the competition's open now, guys. you know what the price is, you know where to find the cheapest in your area. So there's an example of a good community kind of site that could be driven by the community. It's just, it doesn't take a lot of, you know, infrastructure to support something like that. You see a cheap petrol station, you plot it, you're good to go. So yeah, all those things are good, and you know, we're getting there slowly. Every year that goes by, we're getting more mapping technology that's making our lives easier.
You know, it kind of reminds me of some of the 3D cages that I've been in over the years at different universities. I was in one last year up at Albany in New York, and Cornell. And I've been in one in Melbourne recently, in the last 12 months as well. And the way that they've had their sort of 3D map environments working, where they go out and take, you know, virtual photos and then render them onto a 3D environment engine. It's like the stuff happening on PCs is getting very close to these high-end virtual worlds that researchers have been playing around with for 10 years on supercomputers.
They are, although the interesting thing is, what's the reason for taking them out of research lab? I actually, 10 years ago, worked on a project that was initially, actually, it was virtual London, and we plotted out like the central London, Trafalgar Square, and some of the buildings around it, and had virtual walkthroughs of some of the buildings. And some of the research I was involved in, working with some students at University College London on researching usability factors and some of the interesting aspects of how people see data and visualize data on a 2D screen, because essentially we're still on a 2D screen in the 3D world. What was interesting is that actually people don't work very well with it. Unless you're a gamer, unless you're into first-person run-around shoot-em-ups and can work out how to manipulate your way through 3D space, it actually is really hard for the general public to do. That's why people like 2D maps.
Yeah, but you take my kids, right? My kids are 4, almost 5, and I can put them in front of the Xbox, and it's like absolutely a no-brainer for them to run around a virtual environment and climb up walls. Do you think this, you know, these younger generations who Maybe. Have grown up with this stuff have evolved?
Maybe. I mean, the research we did 10 years ago was, you know, we took a lot of students on to do tests, and we took a lot of people off the street to do tests, and the basic results were, it's not good.
I mean, my kids amaze me. You know, they were like three when they started playing the Xbox, and it was like, I thought they'd be completely confused, but they weren't. They just, no, it's like second nature to them.
They don't get confused till they're about 14, and then the trouble begins. I'm sure you remember that.
I'm still very confused, Dr. Neil. Well, listen, mate, it's been great. I better let you get off and do your thing.
I've got to get on a plane, and you'll be able to find out where I am on the Where Was Dr. Neil website, so you can track my location around the world.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Neil.
You're welcome.
How would you describe Matt Freak and the Fat Boy?
Comic explosion of shite.
Human excrement.
Fat Boy, you've got 5 seconds and I'm cutting off your mic.
Ask me how much mini cheese.
Time's up!
Matt.
I don't know what Scouts is all about. Old men, young boys.
Freak!
And the Fat Boy.
I've been set on fire. By Matt.
Keen!
No, it's the sort of name that sticks in the mind.
Sketches?
So that's on the menu today, chub goblins.
But not too much hair. It's tiresome to plug.
Engage Super Turbo Launch.
God, what are you...
G'day, Daniel. It's rough.
You're a jerk. Tom, thank you for your time.
Freak thanks.
Can you help me off this chair? Top 10 best things about being friends with a deaf person. Moving out of your girlfriend's house. Vomiting on your mate's carpet. Fat Boy's film of the week. 10 seconds or less, what's the plot?
Not the hair.
Matt,
the hair.
Freak and the Fat Boy. Music that no one's heard of.
Jokes that no one laughs at.
And masturbation. I think that describes it best.
Right here on the Podcast Network.
The Podcast Network.
Are we getting paid for this, by the way?